I've been legally barred from using an Australian accent to do this, so ring the bell, sucker. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And we are in the middle of a two-movie series where we are watching some of the greatest cinema from the continent and the nation of Australia.
Can I just say, about the accents, they were referred to as war crimes, I think, which is a bit strong. They did not go over well with our Australian listeners.
Some thought they were funny. There was one of our listeners, in fact, she has said that she's going to send us another Australian snacks box. One of our listeners said that she was sitting at work in she's in Australia. She was sitting at work listening to us do accents and trying to say no like I was trying to say Australians say no.
You know what I did the other day? I tried to say no the way you said no, and I couldn't do it.
You know where that comes from?
Where does that come from?
We'll get to what the movie is in just a minute. There's an episode of the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project, which is a mouthful of a podcast title, where he is a surfer named Hot Dog. And Matt Gourley is playing his Australian friend.
Matt Gourley, who does one of my favorite accent impressions, which is his Ian Fleming.
Oh, his Ian Fleming is great, and also I love his H.R. Giger impression.
Oh, I've never heard his Giger.
It's amazing. Go find him doing his H.R. Giger impression somewhere. I think he's done it on Super Ego a few times. And I think he was on a Comedy Bang Bang or something as H.R. Giger. Anyway.
When he was on Comedy Bang Bang as H.R. Giger, did it go on for 45 minutes?
Well, yeah.
Shots fired.
It's a lengthy podcast. He was also on the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project as H.R. Giger. But he was an Australian friend of this surfer. And there's just one part where he's continuing to say the word no over and over again. And it's coming out, noi, noi, noi.
I don't know how to transliterate that. Like, I don't know how to write down what you are saying.
I spelled it on Twitter, N-O, several U's and an I.
So yeah, our Australian accents, it has been requested that we stop.
We're going to try our best not to do it, because I would like to visit Australia at some point in my life, and I don't want to get the boot.
That's a Simpsons reference.
It sure is.
I don't think they really do that there.
The movie we are watching on this episode, last time around we watched BMX Bandits, which is a Stone Cold classic. This time, we're watching a movie that was recommended to us the most by actual Australian listeners, including Lucas Brown, who sent us our Australian snacks box. So I feel obligated to do it to some degree, but it's also the one we got the most when we asked for suggestions for another Australian movie to watch. It is Razorback, the 1984 horror thriller directed by Russell Mulcahy, who you may know as the director of Highlander.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I think we're going into this movie pretty cold.
Yeah, I will say, I'm nervous about this movie. I'm a little tense right now.
Would you like to explain why?
Well, Matt, you know what I don't like.
You do not like scary movies.
I don't like scary movies.
Okay, I for your sake, I went and I looked up some descriptions of Razorback to find out. To find out, you know, if it's really scary or what. So let me ask you this. How do you feel about the movie Jaws?
I have controversial opinions about the movie Jaws, in that I find Jaws to be largely very boring.
Okay. Is it scary to you?
It is not scary to me.
Okay. Critically, the movie Razorback has largely been compared to Jaws.
So in the way that BMX Bandits was the Australian Goonies, we're about to watch the Australian Jaws. It's the 4th of July. We can't close the beach. Sorry. That's it. I'll try not to do any more. Sorry.
I do not believe that the 4th of July is an Australian holiday. among other things. Here's what Clint Morris of Movie Hole said about Razorback.
Uh-huh.
He called it Jaws with a wiggly tail, ferocious and fun.
Jaws with a wiggly tail. Oh, that sounds good. That sounds great, actually.
Yeah. So that's what we're in for with Razorback. There's one more thing that I want to get out of the way before we dive back into another extended snack situation segment, because I don't know that there's a lot more to say about this movie. It's a movie about a deadly razorback boar. Mm-hmm. Is it a warthog?
It's described as a wild boar in all the summaries I've seen.
Okay, so it is a boar, not a warthog. Good to know.
Yes.
So this razorback boar is attacking people in the Australian outback. That's all there really is to know about this movie. But there is a connection to BMX Bandits.
Okay.
It is the actor from BMX Bandits with my favorite name, David Argue.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Angelo D'Angelo.
It's not Angelo D'Angelo. It's David Argue, who also played Whitey in BMX Bandits. His character name in this movie is Dicko Baker.
Oh, I'm excited already.
I have a real question for our Australian listeners. Is Dicko a common Australian name?
I hope it is. I really hope it is.
Because Dicko is like, that's like, you're already going the extra step to make fun of the name Dick.
Yeah, like, Dicko is what I would call somebody who cut me off in traffic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm driving Dicko.
Come on, you Dicko. There's no O in Richard. It blows my mind, the name Dicko. I would really love to hear some people explain to us what's going on with the name Dicko. Chris, any other initial thoughts about Razorback before we jump into snack situation?
Yeah, don't tweet or email me about Jaws. look, it's fine. It's well made. It's a lot slower than I was expecting. That's all. No emails, no tweets.
It's a movie from a different
time. Don't at me, bro.
It's a different kind of thriller. It's from a different time.
Yeah. I also find Predator to be pretty boring, to be honest with you.
We've had that conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look, don't at me, bro.
We're going to watch Razorback here shortly. But first, we have half an Australian snacks box to get through for the hottest segment in all of podcasting. Snack situation. You'll have to fight with something to eat. Sometimes it's savory, sometimes it's sweet. Snack situation. What you snacking on? Okay, Chris. Before we get into the snacks we haven't yet talked about from the snack box, I want to know what if anything from the snack box that we talked about last time you have finished.
I knocked out the Tim Tams. Oh my god!
All of them.
All of them.
Wow.
Oh, look, it's been like 3 weeks. So it's not like we're recording this the day after our last episode.
I spaced them out. That's true. But I still have some Tim Tams left. I have a lot of the three bean Tim Tams left. I haven't eaten
those. Those were the first ones. I ate them one package at a time. So I ate all the three bean ones, and then I ate all the I saved the salted caramels for last because you told me those were good. What were the other ones?
They were coconut.
Yeah, the coconut. Those were surprisingly good, I thought.
The coconut ones went first for me. I still have one salted caramel left and several three bean.
Yeah, shout out to Tim Tams and the Australian celebrity chef who brought us those salted caramel Tim Tams specifically.
Adriano Zumbo.
Yeah, those were magnifique.
I finished the Chiquito bar.
I ate the Chiquito bar. I thought that was good. I threw away the Violet Crumble.
I've still got the Violet Crumble, but I should probably throw it away.
Oh, apparently it's honeycomb is what we were told.
That is apparently what it actually is. Yeah,
it's in there. Not into it. Not into it.
Me neither.
It makes my teeth feel weird.
I ate the Caramella Koala.
I still have my Caramella Koala. I ate my the frog that you thought was a turtle.
Yeah, that would be
that you shamefully that you unbelievably thought was a turtle.
That would be Fredo. Warning about Caramella Koala. Caramella Koala is messy. Don't eat like half of it and then put it back in the box because it's going to get caramel all over everything.
Okay.
I've still got a lot of this dairy milk thing left. The marvelous creation.
Yeah, I have not cracked open the dairy milk. Here's what we have left, okay? Because we said we would do all the chocolate stuff and then all the non-chocolatey stuff.
The fruity candies.
The fruity candies. I still have some of the Arnott's mint slices. Aiden had a couple of those, but I have not yet.
I have not tried them. So you want to bust into these?
Yeah, do you want to try one right now?
Yeah, I'm going to try one right now. Arnott's mint
slices. Okay, let's do it. Cheers. I just bopped my microphone with the... All right,
I'm bopping my pop filter.
Okay. Didn't hear it, but that's pop filter. Makes sense. All right, here we go.
It's like a junior mint with a cookie in it.
Yeah.
The mint is a little less minty than a junior mint, which I appreciate. It's a very subtle mint flavor, which I like.
I wonder if this is like the Australian equivalent of thin mints, because that's what it kind of tastes like to me.
But there's a crispy... like crispy cookie thing in there too. I like this more than Thin Mints. These more than I expected.
I like the because the mint flavor is not as strong. The problem I have with most mint chocolate candies is that it's like chocolate and toothpaste.
Yeah, we've talked about minty stuff on the show before. I think we're both not big mint people because it reminds us of toothpaste. It reminds me of going to the dentist and having fluoride put on my teeth. Mm-hmm. This is subtle enough that I can enjoy it.
Yeah, like, I'm telling you, man, Arnott's, they make the Tim Tams, they make the mint slices. Arnott's knows what's up.
All right, the other minty thing we have is a Nestle Peppermint Crisp.
I don't have that.
You don't have a Nestle Peppermint Crisp?
I do not have a Nestle Peppermint Crisp, unless I had it and lost it.
Okay, well, I'm going to try the Peppermint Crisp during the movie, and I'll let you know how that turns out.
Here's what I have left. I have Caramella Koala, previously discussed. I have the dairy milk, and my dairy milk is Jelly Popping Candy Beanies, which I think means it is a chocolate bar with jelly beans inside.
I think that was a ska band from the late 90s.
Right, right. The Swing Revival.
Right, right, right.
Here's the thing about this. I am not sure I am going to enjoy the Jelly Popping Candy Beanies inside the Cadbury Dairy Milk Chocolate. And this is the largest candy bar I've ever seen.
It's huge. The one that I have is huge also. I Marlene tried it. I like it okay. Like once
it's
you get
the size of a Kindle.
Once you get past the stuff inside the chocolate, it still just tastes like dairy milk chocolate, which is delicious.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to try it. I like jelly beans. I like chocolate. I'm excited about getting those. I just don't know if I'll like them together. The idea of jelly popping candy beanies is off-putting to me.
Just the phrasing of that?
Yes. Just the phrasing is what it is.
You have some Daryl Lee twists.
I do. I have Daryl Lee grape twists. Do you have grape or do you have another flavor?
I also have grape.
Okay. I feel bad. Because this was candy sent to us at great expense from another country, and we're kind of the part where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. But this is described as our famous licorice with a bit of a twist on the package, and I hate licorice.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had one or two of these. They're more grape flavored than licorice flavored.
Well, I was wondering if they were just like Twizzlers.
But I don't know if I would just sit down and eat these. I don't think they're that bad, but I don't know if I'm going to eat the rest of them, to be totally honest. We can confer on that at a later date. Another Daryl Lee product that I have are the Bigger Better BB's Orange Chocolate Balls.
Oh, yeah. I actually – those are not in here because they are in the kitchen because I was hungry one day and I just opened it up and started eating them.
These conveniently come in a resealable bag, which is the only candy that we got that does that. I like them. I'm a big orange chocolate guy, though. I believe you are not.
No, I am. I am and I'm not. Like, I only have orange chocolate at Christmas, so I have very positive associations with it.
Okay.
But I do not generally go out of my way to seek out orange chocolate. But these, I thought, like, they're basically like M&M's that are the size of gumballs.
that have a little orangey flavor in them.
Have a little orange in them. Little citrus to them.
I like that. And then the last thing that we have are Allen's Jungle Stretchies.
I have sea stretchies.
Sea stretchies.
Yeah, you have jungle stretchies.
Are yours one piece, one portion?
Well, I was going to tell you, Matt, that's the good news about these. They're one piece, one portion.
Yeah. Now, I thought for sure that this meant that it was, you know how we try to cheat in America with kids where we say, hey, this candy has a serving of vegetables in it or a serving of fruit.
Right.
Like, oh, eat this super sugary toaster strudel. There's fruit in it.
You know how we lie to our to children and adults about what they eat and how there's an obesity epidemic in America?
That is not what these are about. The one piece equals one portion thing is just like, hey, only eat one. Hey, kids, only eat one of these because that's all you should eat.
Well, no, like it's also the nutrition information thing. Like the nutrition information is for one piece of this candy.
Yes.
So there's approximately 7 pieces of candy in this. Each one is going to give me 320 kilojoules of energy. That's a thing that they measure food with in Australia? That's weird. That's the first thing that's on here. It's not calories. It's energy measured in kilojoules.
Yep. In the UK, they use kilocalories. It's a little different.
This makes me feel like... That's some Mad Max shit.
Well, here's the box right under the nutrition information. Good to remember. Keep the smiles going by enjoying the right portion combined with physical activity. Contains no artificial colors. So it's literally just like, hey, only eat one of these, kids.
Yeah.
These are pretty good. They're like gummy candy. But we'll come back and talk about more. I'm gonna try this peppermint crisp. I'm sure we'll snack on other things while we're watching the movie and have.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the sea stretchies. I like a good gummy candy that gives me 320 kilojoules of energy.
Yeah, you're gonna need that energy.
It's such an abstract concept for me.
You're gonna need that energy to talk about Razorback when we come back. I do not believe that Razorback is readily available on any streaming service. You have to rent it on Amazon. But if you would like to watch along with us, you may do so. We're going to take a little pause for the cause, then you're going to hear a musical interlude, then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Razorback. And we are back from watching Razorback. And before we get into talking about our snacks or talking about the movie, we do want to give a little content warning here before we continue. There is a scene that sets up what is about to be a sexual assault in this movie. We're not going to really get into too many details of it, but before we get into that, we thought we should give a little warning.
Yeah, if you want to skip out on that, you can just listen to us talk about snacks for a little bit, and then we'll catch you in 2 weeks.
All right, so let's talk about some snacks. Now, the one that we both tried, I guess we tried it before we started, right? We tried these mint slices.
Yeah, we tried the mint slices. Those were tasty.
Those were good. Now, I tried the peppermint crisp, which for some reason I got and you didn't. And look, I first of all, I want to say thank you so much to Luke.
Yeah, thank you. This is absolutely fantastic that we got a box of snacks. Like, that we got a box of snacks regardless, but that we got a box of snacks from Australia is amazing to me.
Yes. So I want to say, before I say anything about the peppermint crisp, that I am so grateful that Luke sent this to us at considerable expense and trouble to let us try these snacks. But the only word I can really use to describe the peppermint crisp is insulting. It's bad. It's like chocolate around this like hard candy mint that looks like kryptonite. It's like that shade of green. And it's like, I can't even describe, like there are crystals of mint hard candy inside this candy shell, this chocolate shell. I tried it, and I thought it was bad, and I let my wife, Marlene, try it, who generally likes minty stuff, and even she was like, oh, this is not my favorite. So we're going to call Peppermint Crisp a loss, unfortunately. What about the grape twists?
These were the ones I was skeptical about going in, but grape twists, I'm a fan. They're huge, for one thing. Like, I thought they would be like Twizzlers, but they are like, they're huge. They're huge chunks of I guess they're like extra thick Twizzlers is how I would describe them. More grape flavor, less licorice flavor, always a plus on that. So I enjoyed those quite a bit.
They remind me of another chewy grape candy that I can't quite put my finger on, but
I mean, they really just remind me of like of like gummies, you know?
Yeah. There's a real subtlety to the flavor of that, which we found to be a theme throughout all these Australian candies. It's like,
yeah, Australian candies are not as the chocolate is the exception, but generally speaking, like the candies, the fruit candies, the flavors are not as sugary and not as strong. But I kind of like that. Like they're a little subtle and they're good.
And while we're talking about that, we'll talk about sea stretchies / jungle stretchies, which are just kind of like a mildly flavored, somewhat fruity gummy snack that is not bad at all.
Yeah, I actually liked these a lot, I think. But I only had one, because one piece is one portion, and I only needed 320 kilojoules of energy.
What mine are supposed to look like is an elephant with a really long trunk.
Uh-huh. Did they not look like that at all? Because I'll tell you what mine do not look like at all.
Like an octopus?
No, they're supposed to be, like, they're like sharks, but with, like, a big long thing on the front. So it's just like a shark with like an extending alien proboscis.
Well, I guess they're supposed to look like different things, because I pulled out one that is a frog with a long tongue just now. And I can actually identify what that is.
Are you sure it's not a turtle?
We've eaten several of these. I've eaten several of these that I have no idea what they were supposed to be. But I could identify the one I just pulled out of the bag. So maybe it's not as bad as I said. Of the candy makers whose candies we have tried, I think we got to go with Arnott's number one.
Arnott's is the clear number one.
Daryl Lee, very good.
Yeah, Daryl Lee's solid. But do you like the Daryl Lees more than you like the Cadburys?
I mean, I love...
You're a Dairy Milk guy.
I love Cadbury. But the examples of Cadbury candies that we got, I'm not a huge fan of. I like just regular Dairy Milk, and right. Putting stuff in Dairy Milk, I feel like just takes away from it. So this is like Dairy Milk with a bunch of junk in it. I might be overstating that.
The little like raspberry Krispies one was not the best.
Yeah, here's what I'd say. Arnott's number one, then Daryl Lee. Then Cadbury, then Allen's, even though the jungle stretchies, sea stretchies are very good. That's the only example of Allen's that we got.
Uh-huh.
And then bringing up the rear, I think we got Nestle, because even though we both like the Chiquito, the Peppermint Crisp and the Violet Crumble were probably our least liked candies.
No, so, was the violet crumble and I guess it is a Nestle product.
It is a Nestle
product. That thing is a hard last for the Violet Crumble. But I gotta say, like, overall a pretty fantastic box of snacks from Australia.
Yes, once again, we appreciate it so much. Thank you for sending that to us, Lucas. We did enjoy it. Okay.
Yeah. Now, okay, here's the thing though. The movie we just watched does not present us with a country that is capable of making candy.
But speaking of things we enjoyed, I think we both did mostly get a kick out of Razorback.
Yeah, I'd say I'm like 75% on board with Razorback. You know what I'm going to say? More enjoyable than Jaws. Not as good. Not as good by far, but more enjoyable for me.
An interestingly stylized movie. Like, not what I was expecting at all in terms of, like, just the visual presentation of Razorback. Like, clearly a lot of work went into making this movie look crazy.
The look of this movie is amazing. Everything is shot really stylized. There's a weird dream sequence in the middle that's all like matte paintings and like video effects, which is really weird. But
you described it as our protagonist walking through a series of Salvador Dali paintings.
Yes, I think that is absolutely what it was. Even beyond that, like the color choices are really amazing. Everything's lit in, like, there will be long scenes where things are lit in shades of like green and red and blue, like electric blue, which is a really interesting choice.
The two lighting choices that I think are the craziest involve the two bad guys of the movie that are not evil boars. So it involves our old friend Dicko and his brother Benny, who own and operate, as far as I can tell, a dog food factory.
I don't know if they're the owners or if they work there. But I don't know anyone in this movie's name except for Dicko. I literally do not know anyone's name.
According to Wikipedia, this never came through for me in the movie because I might have just missed some dialogue. But apparently they are illegally making pet food.
Okay. Because, I mean, like, okay, let's get this out of the way right now, all right? This movie appears to take place in Mad Max times. I mean that there are, like, vehicles with, like, chicken wire armor plating over the windshields and, like, cans of machetes and skulls mounted on the hood. There is no police presence. Like, the world looks to be ruined.
Or at least the continent of Australia does.
Yeah, well, I mean, we see a scene of New York.
Yeah.
Which is great, because it's just a guy with a boombox, some buildings, and two taxis driving on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, Sydney.
Yeah.
So they're, like, the most Mad Max people in the movie. The two bad guys, Benny and Dicko. Their dog food factory, which I can only assume has been abandoned somehow, and they just took it over, and now they're making pet food there.
Yeah, when the fall came.
That's right.
After the long, long ago, they rebuilt this dog food factory.
Their pet food factory is lit by this flashing blue light in the background that looks like fake lightning.
Yeah, there's sparks and lightning, and it's full of smoke, and there's, like, a sluice for blood that just drains out back, like, into the dirt. Like, I told Matt while we were watching it, I was like, look, we're all familiar with Upton Sinclair, but I don't think it's like this.
So that's one weird lighting choice. Also, inside that factory, there's a big spinning fan blade thing that goes around and around.
It's like there are a couple times in the movie where it either threatens to or does like chop someone up, but it is not that large and it is not spinning as fast as, say, a ceiling fan.
It just looks like a fan, but yeah. It is lit from below with this red light that has no real purpose other than like a lighting effect, right? There's no way they would actually light this thing inside the factory this way, but it's got this like crazy neon effect that's really interesting. Also, they have this, we can't call it anything but a Mad Max truck.
Yeah.
It's the truck that Dicko and Benny take around the outback to shoot kangaroos, because Dicko is a professional kangaroo shooter. That's established in the first minute of the movie.
Oh, he's one of two professional kangaroo shooters. And that is the word the movie uses to describe them. Professional kangaroo shooters.
This is the truck they use for their professional kangaroo shooting. And it is lit in the cabin, you know, in the side of the van with
the
this cockpit. Like, yeah, with this like weird neon green light that make them look like characters from Repo Man.
Yeah.
Like there's a real Repo Man vibe to both Dicko and Benny.
Yeah.
Like what they wear, their hairstyle, like their crazy like homemade goggles. It's like,
yeah, they wear goggles with like mesh on the sides. like they carved out from a colander and just mounted them on the sides of their goggles. Dicko's wearing a coonskin cap and like the arm parts of a pair of rubber gloves, but not the hands.
I could talk about the character designs of Dicko and Benny for an hour because they're like Repo Man crossed with Mad Max.
Yeah. There is a real Mad Max vibe to this movie. And I know that it's Australian and that's an easy comparison to make, but there's a real Mad Max vibe.
We ended up comparing this movie to several other movies.
Yeah, the thing that I wrote down was Jaws. Like, this is in order of in order of how much it is each thing. So it's Jaws plus Mad Max plus Psycho plus Evil Dead plus Memento.
Yes, and we'll get to how it is similar to all of those in a minute. Okay, so the movie starts with the character Jake Cullen, who is this older man with a white beard.
Probably just going to call him the old man.
Yeah.
For the duration.
Sitting in his house, caring for his grandson, when a giant boar comes running through his house, through the walls.
I would say the size of a car.
Of a mid-sized sedan.
A Corolla.
Of one length of car.
One standard car size, one Corolla.
It comes blasting through his house, destroys the entire house, and takes his grandson away.
And eats him.
It's heavily implied that the grandson is eaten.
I mean, I'm pretty sure the grandson is eaten.
Maybe if they had made a sequel to Razorback, it would have been about the grandson.
Oh, and the grandson was raised by Razorback, so he doesn't know, so he comes back for revenge.
That's right. We're writing a sequel to Razorback right now. Can we contact Russell Mulcahy?
Look, I'm about ready for David Argue to be the first ever Movie Fighters interview. Presumably still alive. If we can get him, if anybody knows where we can get David Argue, I got a lot of questions about BMX Bandits and Razorback.
David Argue, I realized, because he's, you know, he's Dicko in this movie, who is even more of a shitty person than his character from BMX Bandits. So he clearly plays a type in Australian cinema.
Mm-hmm.
The only American actor that I can think of to kind of compare him to is like William Atherton. But William Atherton always plays like kind of a pompous jerk, right? David Argue just plays a fucking murderer in all these movies. Like,
yeah, he's a real scumbag. And apparently he is famous enough in Australia that there was a movie called The Argues, a mockumentary that he co-wrote starring David Argue and his mother. That is, like, I don't know. Apparently he might be kind of a big deal.
Okay. Good to know. So we might not be able to get him as an interview. But this old man, after his grandson is apparently eaten by this giant razorback boar, is immediately put on trial for killing the kid. Because nobody wants to believe that a boar ran through the old man's house, even though there are huge holes. It, like, they could just go look at his house and see that something destroyed his fucking house.
Yeah, like, okay, it is perfectly possible for the old man to have killed his grandson. It is not possible for the old man to have run through his own walls.
Yeah, like, there are car-sized holes in his walls.
Yeah, this boar, the razorback of the title, destroys multiple buildings, like houses. And people are, like, refusing to believe that it exists.
So, he is eventually acquitted, but only due to lack of evidence. It's not because people don't think he killed his grandson.
Yeah, because of lack of evidence, except for the two giant fucking holes in his house.
It's a lack of evidence against him for killing his grandson. They do, however, have Dicko testify against him in court to establish that there's some kind of long-standing conflict between the Baker brothers and the old man and his family.
This courtroom is like a dungeon from Dragon Age. Like, we see the cell that he's in. Like, it's all, like, super stylized. There's, like, a heightened reality in this movie that I kind of really dig. Matt, did we mention that the first shot of this movie was of a wallaby? I think it's a wallaby. It might have been a kangaroo.
It might have been a small kangaroo. Or it may have been a wallaby. But yes, that's the very first thing you see. It is an extremely Australian movie, but I really wonder how Australians regard this movie. But we'll get to that in final thoughts, because I really want to talk about this in final thoughts.
Okay.
All right, so jump ahead 2 years.
Is it two years later? Is it that long?
Yeah, yes.
Because I wish it was like 20 years later, and the Breezerback was still out there.
We jump to New York City.
I am Beth. I am an American.
We have...
Yeah. You guys really got on us about our Australian accents, but you know what? You know what? You bunch of hypocrites. You rats.
Okay, so Beth Winters is at home with her husband, Carl. Mm-hmm. They're watching a show on TV about animals being mistreated. It's a news special. And we find out that Beth is working with an American wildlife preservation organization. And she's going to go to Australia and do an expose, like some kind of documentary.
Yeah, she's a reporter, but she's also like I guess she's kind of like a crusader reporter, and her crusade is like animal cruelty and wildlife preservation.
She's an activist reporter who actually works for an activist organization. And she is going to go investigate how people like Dicko are going out into the outback, shooting Australian wildlife, and turning them into pet food.
Yeah. Which, considering that everyone refers to him as a professional kangaroo shooter in the trial, which is literally the only evidence of any kind of law or society that we have in this movie, everybody knows he's going out and shooting kangaroos and turning them into dog food.
Yeah,
nobody
in Australia seems to mind. Yeah. That this is going on. The only person who cares about the animals at all is Beth.
And I have heard, and feel free to, you can at me on this one, you can correct me. I have heard that, like, in Australia, they're like, yeah, fuck kangaroos. They're the worst.
So they're kind of like deer in America. Like, a lot of Americans that have to deal with deer on a regular basis hate deer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. She gets to Australia. There's this town that really is just one building. It's a hotel that is also a pub. And she's hanging out in this hotel/pub, trying to interview some people. She gets an interview with Jake where she's like, hey, do you kill boars? Do you kill razorbacks? And Jake just straight out tells her, like, it's the only thing that makes me feel good. What is the actual line, Chris? Did you write it down?
What does he say? Like, shooting the shit out of a razorback is the only thing that is just brightens up my day.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Sorry, that might have been a little clone trooper. I apologize. I'm sorry. Sorry. But he does say shooting the shit out of a razorback, which I think is pretty funny.
She definitely does. Or he definitely does. In the course of her investigation, she eventually gets some footage of Dicko and Benny making their dog food. Like, she goes to their dog food factory. They have, like, these, like, kangaroo carcasses just hanging up outside, which cannot be any kind of safe way to handle meat without it immediately spoiling.
Yeah, it seems, like, mega gross. I am sure that actual, like, renegade dog food factories are not pleasant. I am taking your word for that. But I also feel like you don't just hang the meat up outside, if only because, like, that is more unpleasant than necessary.
She gets some footage of these guys and then manages to get away for a minute. But at one point later in the evening, they catch up to her. They find her.
Yeah, she gets away in her car. And is it while she's driving back, or is it later on? Because this is kind of the last we see of the cameraman. The cameraman doesn't go with her for some reason.
Yeah, it feels like they get the footage of the factory earlier in the day, and then at night they catch up to her when she's driving and stop her with their Mad Max car. In fact, there's even like they're trying to run her off the road. They're like,
they run her off the road, Fury Road style.
They're smashing into her car with their Mad Max truck.
Yeah.
Now they pull her out of her car, and this is where the what we had to warn people about, the attempted sexual assault happens, where Dicko is like hovering over her and leering at her and trying to take his pants off, and it's a gross moment.
And it goes on for a real long time, and there's also like Dicko and Benny's truck has a spotlight on it because they blind the kangaroos with the spotlight, so I guess they are like deer in that regard. And so he's like just moving the spotlight around and like, you know, like, yeah, like, you know, like egging him on and basically doing commentary. It's like, I was like, I think I said to you, I'm like, well, at least we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this scene is about to be interrupted by a Razorback showing up.
And it is.
And it is.
The Razorback starts making noises and immediately runs off Dicko and Benny. They get in their van and drive away. But they leave Beth there. And Beth is like, not sure what to do. She doesn't even really know what this thing is. She tries to get in her car and take shelter. But the Razorback, like, rips the door off of her car and just eats her. And at this point in the movie, I was like, you know what? Maybe we're going to find out, since it stopped this attempted rape, maybe we're going to find out that the Razorback's actually a force for good. And that theory went away like really Godzilla. Quickly. Just like Godzilla.
No, it chases off Dicko and Benny and then just eats her. And this was another thing, because the movie sets her up. This is where the Psycho comparison came from, because the movie kind of sets her up as the protagonist, and then she's dead. Like, she is gone.
Yeah, and Psycho, like, Psycho makes you think that Janet Leigh is the protagonist for half the movie. Mm-hmm. But this, you only get her for 20 minutes before she is dead.
Yeah. So then I assumed, like, oh, well, the old man is going to be the protagonist. Like, people are going to, like, finally realize that, oh, we've got a Razorback problem, and they're going to come to him just like they come to Quint in Jaws, because, you know, nobody really likes Quint, right? So, but now that they know they've got a Razorback problem, they're going to go to the expert. That's also not what happens.
Well, the thing is, they don't know that they have a Razorback problem even now, because there are no witnesses of Beth being killed.
Well, except for Dicko and Benny, and they're not talking, obviously.
Right, and they're only kind of witness it. They just can put two and two together. But the story becomes that Beth falls down a mine shaft and dies instead of being killed by a Razorback.
Yeah. And I guess it's the mine shaft story because they do not find her body. That's kind of a recurring thing.
So after Beth dies, Carl, her husband, who is played by Gregory Harrison, who is actually an American, so his American accent is 1 million times better than hers. He shows up in Australia in this little tiny shanty town and tries to investigate her death. He's trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
The first person he goes to is the old man. And he says, look, my wife was killed. I just want to know what happened to her. And the old man says, look, I don't know. I can't really tell you. But I tell you who might know, Benny and Dicko. So he sort of pawns Carl off on Benny and Dicko, which is kind of the meanest thing that the old man does. Because as soon as Carl goes to see Benny and Dicko, they immediately start fucking with him.
Yeah, and this is another thing that I really liked about this movie. This is kind of the memento part. What's his name? The husband?
Carl.
Carl. I wanted to call him Greg.
That's the actor's name. The actor's name is Greg.
Again, like, a lot of this movie kind of washed over me, even though I enjoyed it. Carl is not, like, Carl's not a cop. Carl's not Liam Neeson, you know? Carl is just some dude who wants to know what happened to his wife, so when he comes to investigate, his investigation is, like, shitty, and he makes a ton of mistakes. Like, he's very bad at investigating and being subtle. Like, they're like, oh, you're American. And he's like, no, I'm Canadian. Hey, what do you know about that wildlife reporter? And I kind of like that because it's a very realistic thing of this guy wants to know what happened to his wife, but he's trying to do it on his own, and he's in way over his head.
And he gets taken advantage of immediately. When we were watching the movie, I said there was a whole, like, a real Paul Rudd feel of Gregory Harrison. He's like Paul Rudd 20-some years before Paul Rudd, you know? He's like the precursor to Paul Rudd. And this feels like a role that Paul Rudd would play. Like, dude who's in way over his head.
And that's something that I really, I thought was an interesting choice. Because this movie presents Australia in the way that, like, Tumblr posts about insects present Australia. Like, it is a movie about Australia made in Australia by Australians, but seems like it's to scare Americans away.
That is exactly what it feels like. And I would like to talk about that more a little later.
Yeah, but it's very clear that Carl is kind of in over his head in this nightmare land.
So the first thing that happens when he goes to see Benny and Dicko is they take him – well, they take him to their home, which is a cave.
Which is a storage container with a ladder that leads down into an underground cave like they're in the fucking Cursed Earth.
Yeah!
It's a Fallout house. It's one of the scavenging stations from the Mad Max game.
It's where somebody would live in fucking Skyrim. It's a cave hideout of evil wizards.
Yes. And they have some kind of weird machinery in the cave part. So I guess that's where they skin the animals. And by the way, there's a scene in this part where Dicko like starts like tying on a kangaroo skin as a cape. Like, it's so weird. It is full on post-apocalyptic at that point.
So after
also, it's established early on in the movie. I forget the name of the town they're in, but Beth says that it's an Aboriginal word for guts, for intestines. So they're in, I keep calling it Gut Town. And it is established very early on, there are no phones. They have a radio that can reach Brisbane, and that's it. And like, everybody in town communicates by shortwave. And there's like two shortwave radios in town. Phones, not new. This movie is from 1984.
The next thing that happens is they leave the house, and Benny and Dicko take Carl on a kangaroo hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So they all get in the murder van, the Mad Max van. They go out into this remote area of the outback. They find a kangaroo, and Dicko shoots the kangaroo but doesn't kill it.
Yeah, it is revealed that Dicko and Benny shoot the kangaroos and then skin them alive, just in case you didn't think they were, like, cruel enough.
There's a lot of, like, hey, in case you didn't think these guys were bad guys, here's another reminder.
Yeah.
Kind of moments. But their explanation is they don't want the meat to go bad. So they leave it alive until they're ready to skin it, and then they skin it and make dog food out of it. But this is unpalatable to Carl. Like, Carl has been like, another thing that Carl does that makes him sort of adorably naive as an investigator is, like, at one point Dicko brings up the reporter, his wife, Beth, and Carl has not revealed that that was his wife. And he's like, oh, are you like her? Are you some kind of animal activist too? And hilariously, Carl's like, nah, fuck animals.
Yeah, no, not me, man. I hate animals. I'm a deer hunter.
Yeah. But Carl cannot let this stand when they've shot this kangaroo and it's suffering. So he just takes like a hatchet, goes over to the kangaroo and kills it to put it out of its misery. And this is when Benny and Dicko are like, all right, dude, we've had our fun with you, but you just ruined our kill. So bye.
they leave him in the middle of the wilderness and tell him to that since he was the one who killed the kangaroo, that he's got to skin it. They'll be back in 5 hours. Don't go on walkabout or we'll never find you. And do you know how much willpower it takes for me to not do the accent while saying don't go on walkabout?
And they just drive away, leaving Carl out there in the wilderness at night. He falls asleep and uses the kangaroo, the dead kangaroo carcass, as a pillow. And this is where that freaky-ass dream sequence happens, where we see him walking around in, like, nightmare places, where there's, like, horse skeletons jumping out of the ground at him.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Like, walking through surrealist landscapes while horse skeletons attack him.
So that's kind of mixed in with him getting up and actually going and trying to figure out where he is, going walkabout. He does not take Benny and Carl's advice, or Benny and Dicko's advice. He ends up at this, it's like a hog farm. It's like a fenced-in area full of boars. And there's a windmill in the middle of this, like gross water.
Well, doesn't he get attacked by the Razorback before that? At some Maybe. Point in this, he gets attacked by the Razorback, but he also ends up on top of a windmill.
Somehow or another, he ends up getting chased up to the top of the windmill. And the boars knock the windmill over by the time it's the next morning. They knock it over because they want to eat him.
Yeah, and he gets in the water, like, he lands in, like, this fucking cesspool, and he's in the water, and he is, you know, sputtering in this filthy, filthy water, and he goes, oh, you can't, you know, you won't come into the water, you can't swim, you can't get me. This is the second bit of foreshadowing that does not come back at all. Earlier in the movie, in the trial scene, is established, like, oh, hey, if you want to kill a Razorback, you know, their skin's too tough, their hair, it's impenetrable, you're going to have to get under it and shoot. And here he's like, yeah, oh, they won't come into the water. Like, boars won't come into the water. Neither of those things comes back. Neither of those things matters. Very
slightly. What does come back is Carl yelling at boars.
Yes.
This is something Carl does multiple times.
Kind of gently chiding them. Gently teasing them.
Like, you can't get me! Ho, ho, ho!
Ho, ho!
That's every guy's dream.
So yeah, this is when we get the surrealist sequence, and it's not really clear how long he's out in the desert or how it affects him. Like, because in the dream sequence, his like feet are bloody, and he's like tying rags around his feet for shoes. But that's not. I don't think that really happens.
It did not really happen. As he's in the water, and the boars are trying to figure out a way to get to him in the water, the Razorback makes a call, like, makes a noise, and runs all the other boars away, which give Carl an opportunity to get out of the water and run off. And as he's running off, he eventually comes along and finds a house where this lady lives. Her name is Sarah. And she is taking a shower outside, which is another, like, what year is this moment?
Yeah, Australia, what's the deal? Because, like, this is after BMX Bandits, and BMX Bandits seems to exist in civilization.
Yeah, when did indoor plumbing happen? Because, like, she definitely has to take a shower outside under, like, a water tower.
Yeah, like, it's... I mean, I guess it's not that different from, like an American movie where somebody, like, goes out to kind of a remote farm out west in the early 80s or 70s. But it's, like, super weird that, like, phones aren't a thing and that, like, people drive around in armored trucks with machetes just in cans. Like,
I'm taking all this to mean that the Outback is the only true place left.
Yeah, there's two things that I feel like we learned from this movie. One is that, like, the BMX Bandits could ride to the apocalypse on their bikes. Like, it is within biking distance. And also, if Mad Max just, like, went the other direction in his car, he would eventually just hit Sydney.
He would get to Adelaide.
Yeah, he would get to a town where everybody has the internet.
So he startles Sarah initially, but then he also passes out because he's like dehydrated and scratched up and in bad shape.
Yeah.
So Sarah brings him in, patches him up, like puts a cold compress to his forehead.
Yeah. Sarah is a scientist. She's working with wildlife. She's like tagging the boars to find their location. She's raising a couple of them too. She's kind of a half farmer, half researcher. They're very vague.
She's a friend of the old man's too. Yeah. She knows the old man and is sympathetic to him. She's like the only person around who feels any sympathy at all for the old man.
Yeah. This is where the old man comes back, because when he says he was attacked by a razorback, by a giant boar, she's like, oh, I got to make a call. So she calls the old man and he comes in. Now, we didn't mention this, but earlier in the movie, the old man shows his collection of razorbacks that he has shot and stuffed. And he tells Carl, I wanted to call him Greg again, that razorbacks, it doesn't have a nervous system like most animals. It doesn't feel pain.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, you know how some pigs just don't have nervous systems?
Also, the razorback is driving all the other boars in the area insane.
Yeah, like they're cannibalizing each other. They're like attacking humans.
They have ulcers because they're so stressed out by the razorback.
He's basically a pig warlord.
Yeah, like Sarah is explaining all this to Carl, where she's like, yeah, the razorback is causing excess stress in all the other boars that are around and making them eat their own babies.
Yeah.
It's driving all the other boars insane. Yeah.
And again, this would have been going on for 2+ years at this point, and everybody's just like, that doesn't exist. Sorry.
So as Carl is at home or at Sarah's house recovering, and they're starting to build a little bit of a romantic bond.
Yeah, you know, like you do when you're a recent widower and like you see a woman naked for the first time in a while.
And like Carl is at her house, like he goes out and takes a shower, and she's just like looking at him through the whole thing. And then he puts on some clothes that she gave him.
This is the craziest fucking line in the movie.
Please say what the line is, Chris.
I've never seen anyone in my dad's trousers since he died. It looks good.
This is when she's like staring at his crotch for a while. And he's like, what are you looking at? And this is what she says to him.
I've never seen anyone in my dad's trousers since he died. It looks good. And she says it in a really flirty way. To a man who is investigating his wife's murder by pig.
So while really uncomfortable flirting is happening, the old man is out at that cesspool, out by the windmill, where Carl was before, trying to find the razorback.
He shows up and he's like, oh, okay, we know where it is. I'm going to go kill it. And Sarah makes him take a dart gun, like a dart rifle, so that he can shoot it with a tracker, so they'll at least know where it is. So again, no phones, but they have computer tracking, like radar.
She has a computer in her house. The old man finds the boar, tries to shoot it with a regular gun several times, and it does nothing. It just makes it mad. Eventually, he's like, okay, I'm not going to kill it, so I got to shoot it with the dart. So he gets out the dart gun, shoots the razorback. The razorback runs off at that point, and the old man starts searching around in the boar's dung and finds Beth's wedding ring.
Yeah.
And he goes back to Sarah's house, shows the wedding ring to Carl, and is like, hey, buddy, your wife didn't die in a mine shaft. The boar ate her. Here's her wedding ring. So it isn't just personal for the old man anymore. Now it's personal for Carl. It's double personal. But what happens next brings Benny and Dicko back into the fold, because there's a radio conversation between Sarah and somebody back at the hotel. Because Sarah's trying to tell people back at the hotel, like, hey, we know where this boar is. We want everybody to come out and help us kill it. And so she radios back to the hotel, and Benny and Dicko overhear the conversation and hear that they know now, not like the old man and Carl both know that the boar ate Beth, that she didn't fall down a mine shaft, which means that they are now possibly implicated in Beth's death. So they decide that they're going to have to deal with this. Like, they're going to have to silence everybody. So they go find the old man who has gone back to the cesspool with all the boars, trying to lure out the big razorback, and they fuck him up.
Mm-hmm.
Dicko mangles his leg so he can't walk. So they mangle his leg with the intention of the boars eating him and killing him.
Yeah, and they kill all of his dogs except one, and when that dog goes to run for help, they kind of coincidentally run into it on the road and just swerve and run it over. Again, in case you didn't know, they were shitty guys.
Yeah. So the old man, who still has some fight left in him, crawls up to this, like, it looks like a shipping container, but there's also a machine in there that water is dripping out of. So he goes up to this shipping container thing. He crawls up to it. He gets under the thing that's dripping water, and he starts drinking some water. And immediately, the Razorback shows up, smashes into the shipping container thing, and eats him. So our second protagonist is now dead.
Yeah. It's pretty bananas.
They find Sarah and Carl find his body. They also find markings in the dirt that were from Dicko hitting the old man's legs. So
yeah, Dicko has a habit of attacking people and also like putting a meat cleaver in the ground. Like, he'll like stick it in the ground, like beat somebody up, and then pick it up and hit them with it or something.
So now Sarah and Carl are like, okay, the Razorback's going to get it, and Dicko and Benny are going to get it.
So Sarah goes and rounds up a posse, gets everybody in town, in Gut Town, to go, saddle up and try and find the Razorback, and she's got a tag on it. Carl takes a gun, takes a rifle, and a car, and goes to kill Dicko and Benny. Which he does by driving full on into the part of their shipping container that they use as an outhouse.
That's right. But he only finds Benny. He doesn't find Dicko. Benny goes off and runs into a hole.
He falls down a mine shaft.
Yeah, but there's like a... It's like a hand-operated elevator, dumb waiter kind of thing that he gets in, and he's just hiding from Carl at that point. But Carl just like lets it go and sends him down the mine.
No, what I love about this scene is that rather than just threatening to drop him, Carl is standing at the top of this hole, just kicking dirt in his face, like kicking sand down at Benny and being like, "Hey, motherfucker! Like, where's Dicko, you asshole?" Which is such a, like, it's beautifully amateurish, because it's exactly what a, like, tough guy wouldn't do, you know? Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dolph Lundgren, any of the other guys who would be in this kind of movie would just be like, "Hey, I'm gonna fucking drop you if you don't tell me what you want." And this guy's standing at the top of it, like, just side foot kicking dirt at the guy he's trying to interrogate.
But he does, like, lower him down into the mine shaft.
He drops him down the mine shaft at the end. He, like, just hits the controls and he drops.
Yeah. But he lowers them down in there, too, to interrogate him. And Benny tells him, "Dicko's at the cannery. He's at the factory. You'll probably find him there." And then Carl just leaves him in the mine shaft. So Carl goes running off to the factory. The posse is not finding the boar for some reason.
They find the other tag that we see Sarah putting on earlier in the movie, which is just a regular tag on the ear of a regular sized, like, you know, dog sized pig.
Yeah. If anything, it's a smaller than normal pig.
Yeah.
So they find this pig and they're like, okay, this isn't a giant razorback, no emergency. And they all go back to the hotel/pub and start drinking again. And Sarah ends up calling them again and saying, like, "Look, there's another tag. I know where the boar is. It is at the cannery. Come with me to the cannery and we can kill it. And the guy she's talking to over the radio is like, nope, we already did this once. We're all back at the pub now. You, too late.
Yeah, we all know that this giant boar that's been destroying houses doesn't really exist. Because again, it destroys someone else's house, just kind of like some random dude's house in the middle of this movie.
Yeah, like there's a guy sitting at home watching TV, and apparently he had the Razorback chained up somehow.
Yeah, this is never addressed or explained.
This is the most confusing thing in the whole movie. He has the Razorback chained up. He just sits at home and watches this talk show at home, which is supposed to be like this American comedian. He sounds like he's got this like New York, Brooklyn-y accent, and he's telling like bawdy jokes. And the guy just sits at home watching TV and laughing at the show. But somehow he captured the Razorback and has it chained up.
Yeah.
And eventually something wakes up the Razorback, gets the Razorback to leave, and it pulls away half this guy's house. Anyway, the people refusing to come help a second time sets up the big climax of the movie, which takes place at the cannery. Carl goes to take on the Razorback and Dicko by himself. And Sarah shows up to help, but nobody else is there. Carl goes to the cannery and is at first looking for Dicko. And he like corners Dicko. He's about to kill Dicko. And then the Razorback appears. The Razorback eats Dicko like right away. Mm-hmm. Carl ends up trying to shoot the Razorback and it doesn't do much good. So he has to run away, and he ends up on this scaffolding above the floor of the cannery, just trying to hide from the Razorback. Sarah shows up. He knocks out a window and like leans out and goes like, hey, leave. The Razorback is here. It's down on the lower level. It's going to come out and kill you. And Sarah kind of goes, oh, shit, and like runs back to her car and gets in there.
Yeah, No, she doesn't get back in her car. She gets like attacked by the Razorback, and like I thought she was dead because we hear her go like ah.
That does happen, yeah. But she's miraculously alive somehow by the end of the movie. Carl is up on the scaffolding. The Razorback is running around below. It actually knocks out some beams and knocks down the scaffolding. So it's one of those things where it's like, he's coming down a ramp toward the Razorback's mouth. And it's like, I don't know if it's the Razorback's breath or some kind of pipe thing in the factory, but there's like white gas coming up toward Carl's legs. And he ends up just having to climb his way back up. Eventually it gets to the point where he's down on the floor and all he has is a shovel.
Yeah. Again, the Razorback has proved to be immune to small arms fire.
Yes. But he's got a shovel and he's calling out the Razorback. He's like, come on, come on, I'm going to kill you. The Razorback shows up. He hits it with the shovel one time and then has to throw the shovel away. Then he gets cornered by this piece of machinery. He picks up a piece of pipe and impales the Razorback on that, which hurts it and leads to the most Evil Dead moment of the movie, where the Razorback is like
just vomiting blood,
gushing out blood on Carl's face. And then Carl gets the bright idea that he's going to kill the Razorback by luring it into the spinning fan blade thing. Because he gets on the conveyor belt. Somehow the Razorback turns on the conveyor belt by hitting like an electric
thing. Which I just realized that because of this movie's budget, I think it was a little hard to realize, that's supposed to be the meat grinder. That's supposed to be like where they put the carcasses and it grinds them up into the dog food. But it's just like a ceiling fan.
Yeah, that leads to the sluice.
Yeah.
The blood tunnel. Yeah.
So it's like if it had looked more like Matt, you've seen what's the James Bond movie with Benicio del Toro in it? License to Kill is what it is. If it would have been like that thing where it's just like two spinning like spike balls, like I feel like it would have been a little more believable.
So the conveyor belt is going, and Carl is trying to lure the Razorback onto the conveyor
by saying things like, "You're stupid and you stink."
Yeah, so he's yelling at a boar again. That comes back. And he's, like, trying to coax the boar onto the conveyor belt with taunts. And it works. The Razorback comes onto the conveyor belt. He continues to taunt it. And then just as he's about to go into the spinning blade, he jumps off. And the Razorback gets pulled down into the blade, cut up, and killed. This makes the entire factory start shaking. Like, it cannot handle this giant Razorback going into this giant blade. You said it. Yeah, obviously it's built like a giant garbage disposal.
Yeah, you know how sometimes something gets stuck in your garbage disposal and the whole thing kind of like shake, you know, your whole sink kind of shakes a little bit? That's what happens to the factory.
Yes. Then, this is the craziest thing. Carl just hits the mechanism with a 2x4 and the shaking stops.
And everything stops.
Carl shuts down all the machinery. He goes outside. He finds Sarah. And they embrace. Freeze frame. End of movie. All right, Chris, what are our high points?
The visuals are probably the best thing for me. Like, the actual Razorback looks bad, but you would not know it from this movie. They do a great job of kind of hiding it and disguising it.
Well, the way that it is shot, it's always shot in extreme close-up, right? So it looks, you know, imposing.
Gross.
It looks gross. Like, it's got, like, a lot of, like, spit effects on it, and like they try to make its nose look realistic. Clearly, there's a lot of budgetary stuff.
Yeah, the first time where you really get a good look at it and realize, like, oh, this thing looks terrible, is when it's being impaled and vomiting blood on our protagonist. Which at that point, it's like, yeah, this is a hoot. This is great.
For the most part, the practical effects of the Razorback are pretty good, especially considering that what they had to work with.
But the visual style of the movie, like the thing that I wrote down. And the thing that I said to you while we were watching it is that this is the one movie Wes Anderson and Quentin Tarantino can agree on. Because it's so stylized and, like, genuinely beautifully shot in spaces. An interesting use of color. Like, with movies like this, the thing that I think frustrates us more often than not is how dark they are and how boring they are visually. But this movie is not afraid to play with bright colors, to have, like, these dramatically lit scenes.
The first thing that can kill a movie for us, and go watch Doom to find this out, or go listen to our episode about Doom.
Do not watch Doom.
It's bad lighting. This is also true of Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. Mm-hmm. Bad lighting can kill a movie so quickly.
Yeah, because it's a visual medium, and if you can't tell what's going on, you've screwed up.
And this movie is the opposite of that, where lighting almost makes the movie.
It's so visually interesting. Like, it's honestly worth a watch. If it wasn't for the, you know, obviously the sexual assault scene is going to end up in the low points. But, like, this is the kind of movie that I could picture playing on the wall, like playing on TVs at a bar where there's, like, no sound. And all you see is, like, these weird colors and these Australian vistas and, like, the occasional the boar tearing through a house and a guy. Oh, man, here's a high point. The old man's reactions to things.
Oh, yeah. The old man, I think, is the best actor.
He's great. He's amazing. Like, when he looks down and realizes that his legs are all fucked up, he looks to the sky and is like, brah! And then it, like, freeze frames on his face and crossfades to the next scene. That shit's amazing.
There are at least three or four different moments where, like, a bad thing happens. And the old man, there's just a close-up of the old man's face, and he just goes, "Aah!" And it's so good.
Yeah. But the, you know, it's not a boring movie. It's very visually interesting. It's funny.
Well, in addition to the lighting, I think we got to give something to set design.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this movie is shot in a studio. Like, some of it is clearly shot outside. Mm-hmm. But there are big chunks of it that are set in a studio or shot in a studio that are meant to look like the outside. And the stylized feel of those parts are great. It's great. Like, there's one shot that really stuck with me where the old man is – it's the part where the old man is actually confronted by Benny and Dick.
Okay.
And he's sitting outside by a fire. He's like camping out, waiting for the Razorback to show up. And it's dark. Like the sky is dark, but the sun is still up. Like you can see this big round orange sun in the background. And so there's a light from the fire. There's this, you know, orange disc in the background behind him, but the sky is pitch black, which is the most surreal looking
thing. There's a lot of surreality in this movie that works to its credit. Like, this is a movie that's not scary at all, but it's not afraid to get weird. Like, there's a after Carl is rescued, like, when Sarah puts him to bed, like, when he first wakes up, he sees her sitting on the bed, and she turns, and she has, like, a Razorback's face for, like, a split second. Then he, like, he, like, wakes up again. Like, there's, you know, there's a weird dream sequence in this movie where a dead horse chases a man across a Salvador Dali painting. It's, like, this movie is not afraid to take risks, and I really, it paid off for it, I think.
It is very visually interesting and clever and fun to watch for that reason, if nothing else.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what are our low points of the movie? I think we've already mentioned one. The sexual assault scene is obviously the worst of the bunch.
Yeah, I feel like you could have... I feel like there was a different way to play that that maybe would have been more at home in the rest of the movie being as kind of weird and fun as it is. Like, I don't necessarily think that had to be in there. I certainly didn't enjoy watching it, and it goes on for a long time.
It is something that is absolute that would absolutely be in a movie in 1984 that would not be in a movie in
it's very – I mean, we said we wanted an exploitation movie. And it's very exploitation film, you know, like we compared it to Evil Dead. It's very much of that ilk. That's kind of bad. Like the kind of relentless, hey, Dicko and Benny are bad people stuff. Like by the time they're like going out of their way to run over dogs, it's pretty like, okay, we get it.
It's a little like, much. It gets to be
in the way that, in the same way that his character in BMX Bandits was like funny and bumbling until it was time to be scary. Like his character here is like scary and terrible until it's time to be funny and bumbling.
About the acting in the movie, we talked about the old man and how good he is. Almost everybody else is just passable to all right. Like, I think Dicko's pretty good. Like, he's probably number two among...
I mean, David Argue certainly, like, I would absolutely believe David Argue was a real dickhead, because he's very convincing in that role. Not because I have any evidence to that fact.
The actress who plays Sarah is fine. The actor who plays Carl is kind of... There's kind of not a lot to him. Like, he doesn't... I compared him to Paul Rudd, but he doesn't have the same charisma.
He certainly doesn't have the charm.
He just has the looks. The actor who plays Benny is overshadowed by Dicko a lot. But the actress who plays Beth, and I hate to single her out, but she's so
not
bad.
Good. She's
in addition to her terrible American accent, she's just not that good.
Yeah. There's a part where she's doing her live report from Gut Town, and she says that they're shooting kangaroos and wobblies. And then she, like, starts laughing, and they have to do another take so she can say wobblies right, or wallabies right. I did it. And I think that might be a riff on her as an actress, like, screwing up her lines. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case, but it's...
I feel like that's supposed to be a joke on Americans.
Well, it does, I think, make her a little more personable. But I was like, yeah, that seems like something she would do. She's not great. But, you know, like, she's about as good as Sarah. She's about as good as Benny. I think, you know... This is very clearly a low-budget exploitation movie, and I think it's got low-budget exploitation acting and effects that it does the best it can with.
I think that Sarah and Benny are both a little better than her in this movie, unfortunately.
The old man is certainly the absolute tops. He's great.
Oh, he's the top of the top. But, like, you know, maybe it's the accent that really gets me. Because her American accent is...
Her American.
Like, I feel like partially. I partially feel like we were recommended this movie by Australian fans as revenge.
It's, It is honestly
to make us listen to that. To make us listen to that terrible American.
It is
accent.
Honestly one of my favorite things. And Tom Sharpling will do this on The Best Show whenever someone calls from another country. But like, he will insist that they do an American accent. And hearing foreign people's American accents is the funniest goddamn thing. Because they just flatten it all out. It's like, hey, I like chicken. I like fried chicken.
Well, it's either going super, it's going super flat to do like the TV American accent. It's like, hello, I am from America. Or it's like you sound like a robot. Or they do Texas.
Or they do Texas.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, the South. Guys, Texas is not the South. Texas, Texas. It's a thing.
Hello there, partner. I am here to talk about oil and cash.
I like how Low Points has just become us justifying our terrible Australian accents. You do it too, guys. You do it too.
All right. Any other big low points from the movie?
Not really. I mean, like I said, the budgetary concerns are obvious.
I would say that the music is both a low point and a high point.
The music is as surreal as the visuals. Because
it's bad. It is. It's bad. It's like very synthy horror music, horror movie kind of music. But that's kind of enjoyable to me.
Oh, here's a big low point. The actual death of the Razorback is very boring and is not set up. They set up two things earlier in the movie. They set up like, oh, you've got to get under it and shoot him. And they've got like, oh, pigs can't swim. And neither of those comes back, and instead they just dump the Razorback into a meat grinder that doesn't look like a meat grinder. Like,
and that like doesn't look big enough to kill the Razorback. Like, we were comparing it to the ending of Jaws, and it does not compare favorably.
Like, there needed to be something, like, that factory needed to blow up with the Razorback inside it, and then the Razorback needed to stumble out and then die. It needed to be Carl from Die Hard. The actual resolution of the plot is very weak, considering that we've seen this thing tear through multiple houses at this point.
The way I said it was, you know, when the freeze frame came up, it just felt like everybody said, like, okay, the movie's got to end.
Well, actually, what you said when the freeze frame came up, Marlene was in the room, and you were talking to her, and so you're like, yeah, I think we're going to – is that a freeze frame ending? Freeze frame ending? Like, that is what you did.
All right, let's do final thoughts about Razorback.
Well, I never want to go to Australia.
Yeah, this is what I wanted to talk about. I've been wanting to talk about the whole time, but I was going to save it for final thoughts. Do Australians really like this movie? Because the picture it paints of the Australian outback is a nightmare place filled with nightmare people.
Yeah, and it's not even like – it's not even the outback, really, because that's the only part we see. Like, they refer to that as Australia.
Like, the best person in the movie? Or like, the most kind of moral, ethical Australian person in the movie is the old
man? Who's a professional kangaroo shooter.
Who literally says that killing animals makes him feel good.
Yeah.
Okay?
Now, I know that Australia's wildlife is fascinating and terrifying. Like, I know y'all got the insects out there that everyone's afraid of. You got some weird animals. But it's like, this movie makes Australia look like the cursed earth. Like, it makes it look like there are, like, people are literally arming up their cars to ride over lawless lands and get jobs like kangaroo shooter.
This is another movie that we compared, that I compared it to. It wasn't in your list of comparisons, but it weirdly felt like Deliverance to me. Deliverance is a movie where people who are not from the Deep South come to the Deep South and are grossly victimized by a terrain and a people that does not want them, right? That is what Razorback feels like. Beth shows up and is immediately killed. Like, she's victimized. Then the people that are victimizing her get run off. Then she is immediately eaten by a boar. Like, she cannot win, right? And Carl only has a slightly better go of it because he meets a couple nice people.
It's a weird portrayal of Australia. Even if this is like small town Australia, even if this is like small town outback Australia, it's like, again, skulls mounted on the fronts of armored trucks.
Yeah. Like, I like this movie. I would recommend it to people. For many of the reasons we talked about, the visual look of the movie alone. But I am fascinated to hear what Australians think of this movie's depiction of Australia.
Please, please let us know. Because like I said, like, the Australia presented in this movie cannot produce Cadbury Dairy Milk.
Yeah, it cannot be the place that made these grape twists.
it can't be.
If these grape twists were not made in an illegal dog food factory.
We don't know, man. What's the kangaroo content in these grape twists?
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for this episode of Movie Fighters and our Australia series. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Lucas Brown for sending us this box of Australian snacks. They were delicious, and we appreciate it. Our theme song is by Michael Kill. The Snack Situation theme song is by Matt Fisher. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. We will be back, hopefully, in 2 weeks with another movie. Maybe we'll finally get
one. Dolph Lundgren apology tour, are we doing it? Are we doing the canon canon?
I think we're doing the canon canon because we just discovered that Death Wish 3 is on YouTube.
Yes. Death Wish 3 is to America what this movie is to Australia.
We're going to do it. I think Death Wish 3 is what's coming in 2 weeks. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you down the highway.
This has been a Kleitas Media production.